Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Hello and good morning from SFU Burnaby campus, which is located on the unceded ancestral territories of the Musqueam, Squamish and the Tsleil-Waututh Nations. And for today's Speak Up, I have two special guests with me. And before I hand it over to them, I would like to introduce myself. I would be the new co-host for the Speak Up shows on Tuesdays. And I am an undergrad here at SFU studying communications and international studies. And I have a deep interest in understanding technologies, their social implications, AI, and all the cool related stuff, and climate change. So that's the sort of my research interests. And yeah, we'll just go around the room and I'll pass it on to Rin to introduce you.
Hello. My name is Rin. I am also in communications right now. I'll be heading into my seventh year, so I've been here for a very long time now. Some of my interests, I guess, are mainly with like music, arts, a lot of the Vancouver music scene, yeah. So mainly just that kind of stuff. This is my first time on this radio ever. So I'm more like, I'm still learning, but let's see how it goes today.
Thanks so much for joining, Rin.
Hi, I'm Craig, and if Lynn is new to this, I'm even more new because this is my first time in any radio station. I am a third or possibly fourth year student. You can never really know because it all gets jumbled. But in terms of listening, I'm not a huge music person. I'm a lot more, you know, spoken word and entertainment and political, all in that realm. But that's more my era than music. So hopefully I can find an avenue here to express part of my, you know, interest.
Mm-hmm. That's so great. I see that there's like a variety of people in here, and I hope the Speak Up show can hear from you guys soon. And for today's topic, I was brainstorming and stuff like that, and I found one event that SFU was hosting, and it was about working precariously, the new normal. And before I delve into the event that I was supposed to attend, but I had another class at the time, but as a research assistant here, some of my work also looks into technology, social change, social justice, labor movements around technology. So I have like a little bit of background in this stuff. So, and I also know that Rin is like in communications or is transitioning out of communications, but we talk a little bit about technology and its social implications. So I think it will be great to talk about and learn about it. And actually the event also cited an April-based report on understanding precarity of workers in BC. So I will also go off from that report and talk about what precarity of work even means, how it's relevant to people in BC. But before I do that, I just wanted to play a song that Rin suggested. And I think it's a pretty cool song. It's called 17, and it is a Korean music. So I will let you guys enjoy that. And then we'll delve into precarity of labor.
I'm
너무 보색 like this 시간과 공간에 구애받지 않는 자세 자세
힘을 타고 쓰러져도 포기버리고 난 뛰는 중
마치 된 것 같아서
You were listening to 17, which is a Korean music suggestion by our guest today, who is Rin. And I really enjoyed the fast music beats, and it's a good start in the morning, essentially. But yeah, let's get back to the topic for today, which is precarious work and the sort of different characteristics to call something as precarious work and the definition around it. As the two authors of the book, Angelika Ivanova and Dr. Kendra Strauss put it, is that precarious work can mean not having dependable hours, no job security, few, if any, benefits, or lack of meaningful access to any sort of workplace rights and protections, the kind of work arrangements that create insecurity and hardships for people and their families. So that's the notion or the ideas related to precarious work. And I'm just going to expand on that and also include we normally tend to attach precarious work with digital technologies and how like different user interfaces allow for users to do work and do jobs related to tasks. So if you do 100 tasks per day, you get paid according to that. That has got a big hit because of the use of AI, specifically ChatGPT. And that is because these tasks were so simplified and so broken down into parts that it could be easily done by artificial intelligence. So with precarity of work, there is also an issue looming over them that is of AI. And these people who are in this form of labor also do not have any rights that a normal worker would have because they don't have a full-time job, or they are not in direct partnership, or they're not working under a direct firm. So for example, one example that I can come off is that Google, Microsoft, and many other big tech giants have their laborers working in Philippines, working in India, working in remote areas. And they support this idea, which is called gig economy, which is that small tasks are separated and often outsourced to different countries because their labor costs is low. They don't have to give them any benefits. Yeah, I think that was me talking too much, but... what do you guys understand, and what, when you hear the word precarious labor or precarious work, what things come to your mind? Maybe Rin can start, I guess.
Yeah, so for me, I did some research at like 6 a.m. So most of the stuff I've got is either from the Canadian Center for Occupational Health and Safety. Their website has a lot of info on precarious working, or the International Labor Organization has like a whole PDF file you can look at. Very simple information, like kind of like an easy start if you want to learn more about it, but it's not too complicated. Yep. Basically, what I mainly got out of this from digging around in the morning is precarious working is currently growing, especially after COVID. It basically just shot up. We're currently starting to near a recession on top of the fact that like everything's inflated. So how it basically is right now is like employers know they can give out bad working conditions and still get away with this because everyone needs jobs, right? We need jobs to live. And these employers basically are saying, oh, well, people need jobs, so I can give out bad conditions and people will still take these jobs, which is why all this is still happening. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And I also think that these companies who generally hire these precarious workers don't follow the provincial or federal minimum wage standards and other standards like having health coverages, having security when people, actually they don't even come to job sites. So there is no security of working conditions, or their shifts are scheduled in a very unpredictable manner if they even have shifts, because it's, the work is mostly related to the tasks. So for example, if Google wants 100 images to be tagged as violent or not violent, so if image on Google is showing some obscene pictures and stuff like that, so if it has to be flagged, the 100 tasks are outsourced to some other people to flag it. And once those 100 images are flagged or not flagged, depending on their characteristics, they are paid for those 100 images, which is often not equivalent to the work or the wage that is set by provincial or federal standards. Sorry for
Yeah. Actually, it did label last night. So there's types of precarious jobs. So there's agency work, seasonal work, contact jobs, casual on-call jobs, and part-time jobs. It also listed here self-employment jobs, as in you are technically working by yourself, but you're not really working for yourself per se. You're still working for an agency, but you're working by yourself, meaning you're still reporting to your boss, but you're considered self-employed, meaning you get basically no benefits off this.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Would you like to jump in?
Sure. Precarious labor is growing now, as stated, but it's getting especially bad when you consider the rules that are being made to adapt to the laws that would prevent it. Like, for example, child labor has grown a lot in recent years. Well, recently, Iowa passed a law stating that children as young as 14 can be considered okay to work in factories. And there's even a rule saying that if they have to travel like over 50 miles from their home to work, they can legally start driving at 14 and a half. And if something happens where they get into a crash and injure themselves, someone else, or cause death, the employer is not responsible for that because of the laws that have recently been set down, which is, it shows a degradation of society when we are making rules that are allowing for child labor and we are letting companies get off the hook for essentially putting, you know, children in precarious, horrible working situations just because that company can, because part of the rules is they can also underpay those people the minimum wage because they are literal children. And it's something that I think governments and agencies really need to start pushing back on. Because, you know, in terms of child, we hear so much about people talk about, you know, oh, child grooming and, oh, you know, a drag library reading is bad, but yet we're perfectly fine having them work with, you know, bone saw equipment that could, you know, injure or kill them.
Mm-hmm, that's so true. I also think that there is no index, especially in BC, there is no, like, because Statistics Canada maintains an index of different people of different percentages of population, which is employed full-time, part-time, and unemployment is also measured in that index. But there is no index which looks into how many people are working in precarious sectors and people who are working on these jobs which are task-based. So I think this study that I was drawing from actually tries to undo that and tries to measure the extent to which precarious employment exists specifically in BC. And I think that is a great step and in the right direction. But there is, like, as you just said, there needs to be changes in laws and measures and rights and protection of how these people work. And I think it's a long road, and I think there's a lot to unpack as well. But I'll just have one song before we delve into deeper. It's called Truthfully, and it's from a 2019 album. And I think I played it sometime back in February or something, but I might just give it a try today as well. So I hope you guys enjoyed it. And we'll continue talking on precarious labor and work. Yep. So you guys were listening to the song Truthfully by the artist Eva. And it is actually a 2019 song, but I really like the beats of the music. And yeah, we're just gonna continue our journey on understanding and unpacking precarity of work. And you're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM, which broadcasts from Burnaby, British Columbia. And I'm joined today with two amazing people here in the studio. And we were talking about gig economy 3 minutes before the song. And I think it is important to also talk about, because some of these terms are really like overused and we never know what these even mean. So gig economy is sort of like a form of market. Maybe it's in terms of the tech market or even small markets which are transferring themselves online that depend and rely on temporary and task-based part-time positions that are usually filled with independent middlemen, contractors, and the people who work are sometimes called freelancers. The gig economy signifies that there are no full-time permanent employees, but there are short-time, task-based, part-time, temporary workers instead. And why this idea even came up is because it's cheaper for the employees to hire workers on temporary basis rather than the permanent workers, because then they have to pay them different benefits under the provincial and federal regulations. They have to ensure the working conditions are safe within the law of the land, and they have to ensure protection and that rules are followed. But in case of temporary workers, this is a very loose definition, and a lot of work actually comes under this umbrella term of gig economy workers, and they don't have direct law protection in any sort of way. I think one example of the workers of this would be, as I was saying, people in the big tech. So Google, for example, hires many. I know social media platforms also do that to help with the image tagging and like content flagging. And yeah, I don't know if you guys also have some examples, you yourself, maybe, or your friends, or any acquaintances, because I think it's important to contextualize the term and understand what it means, actually. Yeah.
I can start. So first, I want to actually look at the demographic that's actually more affected by the gig economy. Mainly, so what it's been so far is women, immigrants, Aboriginal people, people with disabilities, older adults, and youth have been much more likely to be affected by gig economy and precarious work. Yeah, reason being, well, I guess it's because,
I'm just going to jump in and answer that question. I think the reason why racialized and marginalized folks are most overly represented in this kind of work is because they don't require as many skills in a sense, or like technical knowledge of stuff. And also, these are the folks who have to do multiple jobs to keep their head above. And also because of cost of living. So these people, these demographics resort to task-based work because it's sort of, it's said in the layman language that you get money on the fly. So as you go, as many tasks you want to do per day. So there is no liability or there is no number of hours that you need to work from 9 to 5. So there's no thing as that in gig economy. So the people, as you said, mostly females, they can like do their work related to home and like the chores and stuff, house chores, and they can do these precarious works at the side. So this acts like as an additional labor because it is understood in the way that, oh, it does not not require much of your time or energy or your skill per se. So it's also part of the de-skilling that is happening because of technology, which is that you don't have to know everything when you enter to do a job. And I think there is a very renowned communication scholar who wrote about the precarity of labor and the relations of AI and labor and how it's going to change. Their study from 2019, Gray and Suri, they mentioned that using technology instead of the full-time workers is a form of ghost work. So we assume that it's the machine that's doing the work. So for example, when I used to look at Instagram, for example, I saw that images were sometimes flagged for violent content. And sometimes they were flagged for other reasons. They were flagged for spam. So that's not happening on its own. So that's not what your computer does on its own. That's what some people living in the so-called third world does for the big tech giants. So these are the people who are forced to see those images, forced to see those content. And they are the ones who sort of have a lens before you, and they try to protect you, and they are paid, as I said before, paid minimum, less than minimum wages. And these are the people who are exposed to all this content, and they are the ones who look at this. And that's the reason, because they understand that, oh, we are getting extra money on top of the work that we do usually. So that's the reason, I think, that mostly marginalized folks are the ones who participate in these things. I'm so sorry for jumping in like that, right?
No, it's fine. That's a good jumped in, because I was a bit stuck there, as you probably saw. But one thing I did want to point out is India, International Labour Organization, they did put out a statistics that 1 in 5 employed workers in Canada are only part-time. And that's quite a high number. And I think this number has actually increased since then, because the report is actually not that recent. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so probably due to COVID and whatnot. And I think another main factor, I think, is with the increased jump, and I think all you guys know this as well, like Uber, DoorDash, like Skip the Dishes. We have a lot of new, it's like a new concept almost, right? When like, I think these like delivery drivers became a thing. It was almost kind of like a new thing for us, right? But then, like, these kind of work is just increasing more because people know it's here now. And I think a lot of more companies are trying to push towards that like working method almost. Yeah.
Yeah, and when it comes to part-time work, like part-time and gig economy work, I've had similar experiences like this myself. A couple, probably about last year, I tried signing up for this writing job at this website called Screen Rant, and I got to the next round. And they presented to me what the payment structure was going to be. And that was going to be is you would have to write 5 articles a day. And for each article, you would be paid $10. And then there was like a 33 cent extra you get for every 1,000 views the article got. But if you're making 5 articles a day and everyone else is making 5 articles a day, you're probably not getting that 33 cents. So that means that to write 5 articles a day, I would only make $50, which is less than the minimum wage. And when it comes to issues like that, I feel like if a company can't afford to pay all their employees properly, and in a case like that, if a company can't even afford to pay someone what would be the minimum wage for a day of work, then that company really shouldn't have any reason to exist if you cannot pay your workers to do the content that you're making exponentially more money than they are in regards.
Mm-hmm. And I think especially in terms of like newsmaking and journalism and freelance writing and stuff like that, there is an emerging field of inquiry which looks into this idea of computational journalism, which essentially means that we would have artificial intelligence. And I know for the people who have listened to my open mic before, I hate artificial intelligence as a term itself so much. And I will not go into why and how. You should listen to my other shows for that. But artificial intelligence essentially is this idea that it's taking up the work of journalists in terms of collecting data, in terms of collecting information and the backgrounds of the interviewees, the events. And it is happening because there's so much information on websites. There's so much information on, let's say, Google, Microsoft, Chrome. And there is so much information that it is being repackaged into forms of blog posts. It is being repackaged into news articles, and it is being repeated, and so on. And these, as you just said before, these big tech companies and the news outlets are benefiting off from this recycled, reused things in journalism. And it is very, very harmful because the line which exists between this idea of fake news and this conspiracy theories, it's blurring so much because there are like floods and floods of news articles. Even if you Google, just write the word I in Google, just look at their search results, it would be 100 billion results. And why it's happening? It's because AI actually, in some cases, manufactures in the information from different websites and it presents it as its own. And it is thought as a credible source because it's AI. It's who is doing that. But we tend to ignore that actually AI is just reproducing the same biases. It's reproducing the same systemic failures. And yeah, there I go with my rant on AI, but no, we'll come back to precarious labor. Yeah, in terms of the study that I was looking to and the event that I was supposed to attend, they also underlined that how these folks were the first one to pilot any sort of precarity surveys. And this group of researchers did the first ever BC precarity survey, which was completed by over 3,000 workers aged from 25 to 65. And they based their survey in 2019, and they found some interesting patterns. They found two different categories in which the precarious employment could be measured. First one of them was to understand what does even standard jobs mean. So standard jobs, according to them, is a full-time permanent job for the single employer. That includes the minimum at the least benefits. So that's the sort of standard jobs. And all the other jobs are considered as having some sort of precarity in them. And the things or the aspects that they found were unpredictable scheduling, working multiple jobs at the same time, lacking access to important workplaces benefits like extended healthcare coverage, childcare coverage. So these were the parameters on which the study hinges. And there is a existing employment precarity index and poverty index in Southern Ontario, which they base off their metrics from. And they essentially found out that 37% of the workers in BC are working in a precarious form, one form or the other. And even the standard jobs, as we understand them, have some elements of precarity. So that's an interesting number. I mean, that's before COVID even. So even if like almost 40% of the population is exposed to poor working conditions and precarity in some form, what do you think does that indicate about our job market? Even after COVID and as things are opening up, these ideas of that we are heading in an economic recession, how do you see those ideas contrasting themselves? And what sort of things do you see happening to the job market, perhaps?
Well, when it comes to precarious, work disrupting the job market, especially in the recession, for one, I think it, strengthens my argument that we should all just, you know, go to sleep and skip the 2020s. It hasn't been a good start. Let's just get to 2030. But if that, well, that though that is not possible, the true problems right now with precarious work and the recession coming up is, I feel like there's a just companies are able to come up with a lot of excuses as to why they can undercut this work and get into more precarious working atmospheres because they can say, well, it's the pandemic and then it's the recession and we're not doing well. Like I always say that, you know, if you know, company executives had their own flag, it would be a guy with his pockets turned inside out going, because, you know, every company will tell you they're not making any money, even when they are. So it's easy for them to go to government and, you know, to relax labor laws and, you know, favor more precarious work because they always just claim they don't have money. And the government always feels they need to, you know, be kind to the big business, which, you know, probably extends to the fact that when election time comes around, you look at donor pages, and a lot of those companies are in people's donor pages. So it becomes just a circle of, you know, no money leads to precarious work, and even money leads to precarious work.
Yeah, and because the question is actually who does not have the money and who has the money, and power and money are such funny actors for me, and I speak about it so much in my own show that I host. It's so mind-boggling to think about those two terms and how they are shaping the social structures as we know them. Rin, would you like to add something before I go into the next section and I just go off from them?
I don't really have too much to add per se. Mainly just like, the economy has only gotten worse. If you look at a graph per se, well, I think everyone has mentioned it already. Like, if you look at the graph of like the difference in wealth from like the uber rich and like middle class, that gap has like exponentially risen in like the past 20 years. Yeah, so that's mainly all I have to add for now.
No, that's all good. And I think it's very interesting, as you were saying 2 minutes ago, in terms of not having full-time employees, the other reason that they make, except from the money reason, is that the tasks are so easy. We don't need full-time employees to be sitting in our office and doing that job and you can like work from home. Well, that's true in some extent. But when you are outsourcing that jobs, you are not even paying that minimum wage to those people who are working so many hours to provide the services that you claim yourself to be working. I'm just going to bring up the example of Amazon's Mechanical Turk. And actually, that platform allows you to perform certain tasks for third-party organizations. And essentially, you're working for those third-party organizations, which nobody knows where they exist or even if they exist. So you are given a task. Say, for example, you are supposed to write 100 words content on a social media post for some organization. You're asked to perform that task. And if you take up that task within 10 seconds of it showing on your screen, good, you get the rate. So, for example, it's like $5. But if you don't accept that request, some other person from some other part of the globe will accept that task request and will be paid more than you. So that is how that's working. Even in when we like book Uber or like services from Lyft, we see this thing happening as well. It's because these employees would go lengths and lengths to have to pay less for their workers. And we saw this also trend happening when we had this industrial revolution. Employees tended to have more scientific and organizational skills and using technology to monitor its workers. We can see a similar sort of trend happening in use of AI and using platforms like Mechanical Turk to outsource the work and labor. And the conditions for the workers are the same. And even for the employees, it's the same. They are the ones who are earning money, and the workers are supposed to just like work without any sort of benefits. And the study that I was alluding to before we went on into discussion of economy also highlights that employment precarity has direct negative effects not only on individuals working in these conditions, but also their families, communities, and children. Workers in precarious jobs, especially those with low incomes, were more likely to report poorer physical and mental health. And for the caregivers of those children working in precarious employment were far likely to be able to afford school supplies and trips and so on and so forth. And caregiving is such an important aspect. Because why do you work? You work to have a better living. You work to have a better future for yourself and your children. And even if you're not able to provide that with any kind of job, yeah, that's the question. What are we even doing? So in terms of doing precarious work in any form, it is very important to ensure the workers that are putting in the toil are the part of your machine. So they are the part of the whole infrastructure, and they are secure and they are paid well so that they can meet their ends and they can provide for the family. And the physical and the mental conditions of the workers that I gave an example of, so for example, Facebook, they are exposed to horrific content 24/7. And they are supposed to function like a machine and say, oh, okay, this should not go on the platform. This content should be removed. This should be flagged as spam. So these people are essential part of the digital infrastructure as we know today. So it's very important that we have security and regulations also happening around them. And I think America is the first country who has brought to table some of these regulations in Congress, but it is still going under vetting processes. And as the technology is advancing, our regulations need to advance as well. And I will leave at that note for a moment, and I'll play the song, which is called Yesterday Is Gone. And then we'll have a brief conversation about what sort of policies might be helpful, what sort of solutions, what should be or can be done. And maybe leave on a hopeful note. And yes, Yesterday Is Gone, coming up.
Forgot what I liked, and it used to be some. is gone as the sun has drawn for the day. Said he saw a thousand of his flaws sharper than a claw. Something though it's far, just play long and don't conflict. One, two, three, it's what you see. Words and time, long days gone. So I rise up and fall back down cold to the ground to sleep in my eyes. No one can hold this girl anymore. There's no
You were listening to Yesterday Is Gone, and then One by One on the album called Yesterday Is Gone. And it is actually a 2020 album by the Canadian singer-songwriter Dana Gawenski. And yeah, she has some soft tunes to her music and really empowering words. And we were talking about understanding what precarity might look like and looking at and talking about some of the examples as we might encounter them in the real life. And before we went on the song break, two of the other terms that came up in my mind, because I look at understanding and changing landscape of labor and technologies. So I think I should have had more things to add into today's conversation. But the other term is called ghost work, and it is really related to this idea of using Amazon's Mechanical Turk. And as some of you guys might know what Mechanical Turk was, essentially the idea was that it was supposedly a machine who was playing a game of chess and winning against the other person. But it was later revealed that actually it was not the machine who was playing the chess, but instead a human inside a wooden box inside the machine who was performing those tasks. So in the similar way, Amazon hires people to do mundane, continuous, small, fragmented tasks on behalf of Amazon, and it is supposedly happening that, oh, Amazon is doing the jobs. So, for example, having those tags which says Amazon Prime Day sale and all those certain things and features that you see in a platform are not just what Amazon's algorithms might do. It's actually the humans who are working on the back end and doing those tasks. And that's the idea of having a host work and a host worker. And the researchers that I alluded to somewhere in the starting who coined this term of host work find that host work is very central to precarious work in the digital economy. Because the tech giants very easily denote something as AI, but essentially it's the workers, human workers, who are performing those tasks. And even AI, as I talked in some of my other shows, is based on the human intelligence. So humans are the ones coding those algorithms, and but supposedly it's the artificial intelligence. It's not artificial intelligence. It is basing its own tasks on the human work. So it's not that artificial intelligence is going to take up on all of our tasks or we will become redundant. There's nothing like that. And AI is not what you think it is. It's just the way tech giants get funding and more funding from the government and from other what's the word that I'm looking for? Other stakeholders. In the landscape. So it's all about money. So AI is not taking over jobs. AI is not replacing anyone. It's not taking over the world. It's a whole different game. And similarly for labor and workers and working in precarious conditions, it's not just AI who is taking over. So there have been years and years of work and years of training the machine models on tasks and coding. And they are the ones. There have been millions and millions of people who have contributed to how we see AI today. So saying that precarity is because of AI is not the correct thing. And I think Craig here wants also to add some things about maybe Mechanical Turk or something else that I completely forgot. So over to you, Craig.
Well, Amazon naming its product the Mechanical Turk is interesting because it's basically admitting that the work that they have people doing is being done by the unsung praises of somebody in a box. But I think that when it comes to precarious work, people may look at it as it's lesser work or it's not as good work. And I think that moves into a way employers view work now, where employers are, while not encouraging, they are letting bad work thrive. There is a recently in the movie Blackberry, a character played by Jay Baruchel said, "Good enough is the enemy of humanity," but good enough is what a lot of companies are, frankly, I think, striving for now, because if people do good enough or bad work, it allows that work to be devalued. And if that work is devalued, they can pay people less. And if they're paying people less, they can say this work is non-essential or non-consequential. Like, you look at somebody who, say, sweeps up garbage in a school or does any kind of janitorial work. We think that's not value because it's not skill, but the thing is, an AI robot can't do that. It can't be automated. A human needs to do it. So why is that not valued work, but, you know, something that's a much higher position might be considered valuable, even if parts of it can be automated?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a very important point, especially in terms of having and doing that quote-unquote cleaning work. I think there's a term called micro workers. So people who work in the digital platforms and perform small tasks on a precarious basis They are understood as the cleaners of the internet. So they maintain and clean the hate that happens, the disproportionate targeting of hate that happens on marginalized people happens because there are some workers working in the quote-unquote third world country working hard to have and maintain those regulations and have social media actually be social and not antisocial. I think there's a very important linkage in that sense as well. Coming back, and I know we're running quite a bit of out of time, I wanted to draw on some of the solutions and key takeaways the report about BC Precarity Index highlights. And the researchers find in their analysis that, as Rin was saying, that precarity mostly falls on people on the intersection of inequalities, that is, people of color, it's generally women and gender fluid folks, because they are the ones who are very less represented in terms of full-time jobs and permanent positions. So they resort to these sort of easy money-making methods and are once again suppressed and oppressed, and they face inequalities because they don't have any kind of job security and any sort of regulations protecting them. As the report again highlights, is that BC government is looking into this report, and hopefully we'll have some strengthening in the workplace rights and protections, and there would be some changes as technology brings changes in the labor market. There would be some changes in the labor laws and how we understand labor and work happens, and even how community well-being is understood and how employment and well-being of citizens is interconnected. That's my understanding of this report. Any last thought, guys?
I can't think of too much more to say, but I will say that I do believe that government needs to start coming up with regulations and more enforcing the laws on precarious work. Because if precarious work is becoming more and more prevalent, the government needs to start building like things like healthcare safeguards and more, you know, assistance to help people like that. I know that with government, it's a case of government moves very slowly in, you know, new laws and combating this. But if this is the way people are going to be making money, then the government needs to support them, because they are not going to be supported by the employer like past employees once were.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And I just came across some of the things that is happening in Ottawa. The Public Service Alliance of Canada, actually, which represents more than 2 million workers in every province and territory of Canada, are providing resolutions and providing feedback to the government of Canada to look into how the workers are represented in the gig economy and in the precarious sector. Thanks so much once again, you guys, for joining me today. And I hope I'll have some more material to talk about next week. Thank you so much for tuning in.